This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Special privilege to be here with you today. And I hope that your time here with us this afternoon will be beneficial, will be helpful in some way. And I'm hoping to pay attention to the clock and allow time for interaction. And if I don't give you that luxury, you can wave your hand or stand up or do something, and I will surely try to recognize that. Building confidence with your support base. The title suggests that in ministry, in an attempt to accomplish our goals, we need others. Now, that's not a new idea, but we need others. And I think that's why you're here today, because we're looking for ways to engage others to make what we are attempting to do the most effective that we can be and do. And in so doing, we sharpen the tools of others as well. We are personally the recipients of a good support base. And the topic today, the subject today is so broad, and so very broad. So maybe our focus will be a little narrow today. But I enjoy and appreciate a very interested, committed, and solid church family. Yeah. They get involved. When I go away, when we go away, they're right there and they say, we're just with you. We're praying for you. We're interested in what's going on. And beyond that, there's family. You know the value of family and the value of friends. My base goes fairly broad here because of having spent 25 years serving at a residential training center for handicapped children in Central Virginia near Charlottesville Faith Mission Home. And in our years there, you know, we connect with 700-plus young people, and along with that come their families, and along with that come churches and church leaders. And these are people that, I don't know why, but they sort of follow your trail. So they're interested, and they're involved, and they want to know what's going on in your lives, and so you broaden your base in that way. Mention has already been made of other organizations that we have very much enjoyed working with, and I'm going to I'm going to get to this after a while, but broaden the introduction just a little bit. A support base needs to be able somehow to connect the dots. They want to see a trail that a developing trail that starts with perhaps a ministry and the growth of that ministry, and then it develops into. I'll give you an example. We go to Bangladesh today, and after working there with teaching English as a second language, and we're in Noga District, we're in the north where the opposition party leader lives, and so it's very conservative, very radical, okay? And just after we come home from that, just within a couple of weeks, we get word that a large garment factory collapsed, 9-story building, killed some 1,200 people, and left a lot of other people injured in Shavar. It's right outside of Dhaka City, okay? And so the word is, we need help. Someone needs to help us. And so a couple of us, a friend of mine, well, Donald Eby's son, Arnold Eby, and I, we go back over there to see if these things are so. And we begin to develop a ministry with people that are laying all over the hospitals. There's like 6 hospitals, and there's injured people laying everywhere. Most of them are ladies, girls that had been working in this garment factory. 9-story building, 4,000-some employees. One morning, the thing collapsed in 9 layers of concrete. So here's the story. A young girl. This is not a preaching session. I'm just teaching today. And so this young lady, she gives her story. And she said, when this building collapsed, I was on the 7th floor. And suddenly, I found myself between layers of concrete. I had concrete right in front of my face. And there I was, a dead person on my left, a dead person on my right, a dead person across my body. A crazy person was biting at me. And I was there for 3 days. On day 4, the claw pulls the concrete back. And she said, a man gets a hold of my hand. And he's dragging me across the ground out to the corner where the dead people are being piled. Okay? And he's dragging me along. And suddenly I become conscious. And I say 2 words, water, please. And she said, the man that was dragging me, he was so frightened, he dropped me and ran away. I guess I would have too. And so they take her to the hospital. She needs blood. But there isn't any. The blood has all been given to others. And she said, suddenly, a man stepped up. And he put out his arm and he said, I will give her blood. Now, I don't know, there's a nurse in this. She'll like this story. I think she probably knows about this. But anyways, this man gave her blood and her life was spared. Well, after the fact, somebody said, you know what? We should have checked to see what type of blood this person had. And so they look for the donor. They look for the man. And he's gone. He's nowhere around. Now, somebody here is catching the story. And I say, is it conceivable that the man that stepped forward and put out his arm and gave her blood was Jesus? You see, now we're connecting dots. Okay, there's more to that story, but I'm going to keep you guessing and drop it right there. We'll talk to you afterward because there's not time to finish it here. So as a result of that, now there's a ministry. And so we say, what else can be done with these people, these ladies? Sewing machines, of course. They're seamstresses. Why not? They worked at a garment factory. And so we go back and we begin to look for ways to put something in their hands that is tangible. They can use it to support themselves, maybe others. Give a sewing machine to someone out in a remote village. There's no Walmart down the street. What do they do when they need a new shower chemise or something like that? They go to the lady that's got the sewing machine. She's an amputee. She can't go do anything else. And so now we go to there. And next, what happens is there's a relationship. And so we come back. She's now our friend. And we've been helping her in a tangible way. We give her a Bible. And she begins to read. And then the man in white shows up at her door. And notice how dots connect, connect, connect. All right, we're talking about building confidence with a support base. Are you getting the picture? This is what a support base is looking for. You build confidence by helping those who are interested in what's happening to see how God works. And how involvement helps to facilitate, yes, puts hands and feet onto what God is doing in the world. He needs people to do that. So we get involved, and there are people that are watching that, and they take interest. And then they ask more questions. You're developing confidence with your support base. Now, I'm jumping ahead of my story a little bit. But so then there are people that, well, I got to save that for later. Let's look a little bit. I do have a bit of an outline here. Sometimes I don't pay so much attention to the outline, but we're going to use that. This is what you already saw. Effective ministries are the product of formative communication, integrity, and accountability. Very, very important components as you keep your support base informed. they're looking for these things. This session will explore ways to effectively weave these ideas together with the support base to build confidence. And notice what our goals are here, not only to have confidence, the confidence of your base, but to stimulate vision, because Jesus is building his church and we're participating in that great building. Vision for kingdom building in other cultures of the world. Now, while the ideas that we're going to be looking at here may focus a little different from what you were expecting here, I don't know, but when we think about support, yes, there's people that regularly pray. There are people that regularly ask, communicate, they want to know, they want to be on a mailing list, and these are all very, very important things. But beyond that, there are a lot of people that have come and said, you know what, we'd like to be involved. And yes, a representative from Christian Aid here, recently a man, I'm getting ahead of my story again. I'm going to go back. He's coming a little bit later. But people are asking, all right, so I talk about the sewing machines, and I give this story, and you know what happens? There are people that step forward and say, what does it take to put a sewing machine into the hands of one of these people? I say, for $100, I can buy a brand new sewing machine. Now, they're made in China, and they look like the old-time Singers, but they work great. Flying man, Singer, and we can buy them over there. I can get the machine. I can get a cabinet. I can get a hand drive if they're both legs are missing, and some of them were double amputees. A couple of ladies in that ministry, one lost both of her legs right here. Sometimes an arm and a leg, both legs, one leg. It's terrible. And side note here, but in Bangladesh, if a woman becomes an amputee, life is already cheap. But life at that point becomes worth yet less. Okay? And the tendency is for men to simply drop their wives. They're allowed to have three or four. Why should I care for someone that is an amputee, handicapped? And this is the mentality. And we're talking, out of all due respect, I'm talking about the Muslim people. This is the way that it works. So I say, and I'm not begging for money, but in a presentation I talk about this, and people step up and they say, $100? The hand goes in their pocket, and there it comes. It's been a tremendous blessing. And there was more money than I could spend for sewing machines, and with permission, we said, could we invest some of this money for Bibles and other things? What about an amputee that needs a bathroom? You'll see a few pictures about that. And so my focus today may be a little bit more personal to donor, personal to a support person, rather than a large organization type of emphasis, and you'll see a little bit more as we go along here. Well, let's look at some formative issues. First of all, be foundational. What I mean by that is have a defined mission statement. We're looking at ways for others to have confidence, not only in who you are, but in what you are attempting to accomplish. We had, and Raymond Burkholder is my friend, and I told him I'm going to be using his brochure, and he thanked me for that. This is not, I'm not advertising Macedonian Teaching Ministries. It just happens that he was at our house about a week ago, and I found this laying on my desk. I picked it up. I said, here's an example. Define mission statement. So here I have this little brochure here. Let's go to the next. Okay, so in a mission statement, People want to know just what you're about. So what is my purpose? What do I want to accomplish? And what is my game plan? How do I plan to achieve that goal? So I picked this up. Well, obviously, the emphasis here is on church planting, Macedonian teaching ministries. So that's the overriding purpose. So what are they wanting to accomplish? Yes, church planting is general, but in order to do so, they are equipping native leaders to reach unreached people groups for Christ. It's right on the front. It's just a very simple mission statement, but it just says what they're about. And so how are they going to equip native leaders to go reach their own people? It's a tremendous idea. What's the game plan? Well, the game plan is to teach native leaders. How does that happen? They have a conference. They go over and they teach doctrine. Here they have people gathered in groups, and they're equipping native pastors to go out and plant churches and bring people, influence people for the kingdom of Christ using doctrine, principles from the Bible that they teach in a sustainable way for their culture. Very, very important. It's not Mennonite culture in this case, out of all due respect, but it's sustainable culture. So, mission statement. And I appreciated the statements that are being made when ministries introduce themselves. You heard them downstairs, 20 seconds, okay? It doesn't take a book or a page to do that, just a brief statement that is concise and it's informative. Very, very important. Well, the second thing that's really foundational is a statement of faith. Your support group needs to know who you are. They're interested in your core beliefs. Be ready to define your core beliefs. Now, it's not who people say that you are. It's not who you pose to be. But your core beliefs are who you are. Exactly who you are. And I find it interesting that as I interact with support base, that people tend to hold you to a pretty high standard. Mm-hmm. And that's right. They're entitled to they're entitled to that, and they may. So if they hold me to a higher standard than they actually practice in the home church or wherever, that's okay. But be ready to define some of your core beliefs. People really need to know. Secondly, or in addition, cross-cultural applications of Bible principles and other consistency. Your support base wants to know what this looks like in other places. A little story. We're in Bangladesh, and we connect with a young man. He was not a believer. He went to Australia for his education, spent 6 years there. And while he was there, he met up with a young girl, and she was a believer, he was not. Now, I'm not posing that as the role model here. I'm simply telling you the situation. And in process of time, she gave him a Bible. His background was Muslim, but he said, I'm not Muslim, I just don't believe anything. So he had this Bible. And in time, he and this young girl were engaged to be married. Just a little bit before they got married, were going to get married, she was an acrobat, and she went up in an airplane, as she had done many times before, and jumped out. This time, her parachute did not open, and she jumped to her death. This young boy was crushed. He said, I had nothing. Nothing. I was crushed. He said, the only thing I had was a book that my girlfriend had given me. I was driven to that book, and I began to read, study. And he said, I came to faith in Christ. And he read his Bible. Now he's back in Bangladesh, and I'm at my story. One day, he is on the sidewalk, and he's walking in Dhaka City, And over across the street, he saw some people walking, a couple of ladies from our team. There they were walking. And he looked over and he saw them and he said, those people look like what I read about in my book. I didn't know there were people like that. He darts across the street and he talks to the young ladies from our team. Well, the point here is that cross-cultural applications of Bible principle. Now, and out of all due respect, if missions going to these countries decide to dress in cultural garb, it's okay. I'm not going to say anything more about that, excepting that my personal belief is that we must never attempt to camouflage who we are as a people. This is what the Bible teaches, and in America, this is the application of the principle. Now, when you go to Bangladesh, for example, and the reason I say this is because your support base has questions spinning about how this works in other places, because they might see a picture and they see that the ladies from America that go to serve in Bangladesh wear something under their dresses. They call it pants, and they say, what's this? American ladies are wearing pants in Bangladesh. No, they're not wearing pants. They're wearing leggings. Because how are they to handle this? So culturally, if you come to somebody's house, and it will be a little room about the size of this right here, big enough for a bed in the corner, and your host wants to treat the visitors the best, and so they have you sit on the bed. That's right. They'll seat you on the bed where they sleep, all right? And you've got to sit cross-legged, both for space and to be culturally acceptable. It's immodest. How do we do that? You understand? Our ladies are in dresses. That's why the people from Bangladesh wear the shalwar kameez, the baggy, the ladies wear the baggy pants. It's their garb because they go out to cook, they squat by the fire. When you sit down to eat, you squat, you sit cross-legged. Doesn't work when you wear a skirt. So how does this work? Your support base needs to understand this. Doesn't work any other way. Well, there could be more said about that. Let's look at another point here. We're looking at some formational issues. Decisiveness. Decisiveness builds confidence. Your support needs to believe in you. And I want to say that carefully. They don't need to believe in me, but they're placing confidence in the way that we apply principle. They're placing confidence in our judgment in another culture and in an attempt to do the Lord's work there. They need to believe in you. Sometimes people will look at you and they'll say, what's your level of experience? Now, when we were in court, what time is this session over?
It's over 3:17.
3:17?
Yes.
Ooh. I'm going to do the short version. Actually, I'm going to leave that idea. Decisiveness. Let's look at a few other ideas. Present reliable facts and thought through ideas. Present reliable facts. The light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train. That's really, really important. When I served at Faith Mission, and we'd have a board meeting, and I'd say to the board, I have an idea. What about this? And I'd introduce an idea, and they'd say, okay, follow it to the end. We need to know that this is not just something that hatched overnight, but how do you expect this to look? Now, we can't always predict how it's going to turn out, but they want to see through to the other end and see a plan that has been thought through, that's decisive. Oh, I'd like to tell you this little story. Storytelling is my weakness. I enjoy doing this, and hopefully you will get a point here. Not everything in ministry works out the way that we plan. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't. But sometimes it's for the better. God arranges things. So we go to Bangladesh. We're going there for a baptism, ultimately, and some teaching and so on. We land in Dhaka, leave our wives at the apartment, and Donald, Evie, and I go 10 hours south on the launch, and we're going to have a Jesus meeting with a young believer in the south. Okay? And so we go down there, and he invites college students together from a nearby campus, and we have our meeting in the evening, and we give Bibles to young people. While we're there, up in Dhaka City, at the Gulshan Cafe, there's a shootout. You know about that. 20 people were killed. Some of them, they're foreigners. Some of them were Americans. About 1 o'clock at night, Donald and I were just trying to sort of wind down, and they gave us a cot in the corner, and we were trying to go to sleep. And it got quiet for a little bit. The phone rang, and our pastor from Dhaka City called, and he said, there's been a shootout. A number of Americans have been killed. You're a moving target. You may not. We were going to go on down to the southeast corner of Bangladesh, down there where the Rohingya people are. We were going to go down because there was a young man down there that was interested in also having a Jesus meeting. They said, you can't go down there. You'll get shot. It's conservative. It's mountainous. They're going to kill you. You need to come back to Dhaka. Change of plans. So we turn around and we go back. We go to Noga District where this baptism is to take place. Now there's high security. Things have changed. And we go back. And I don't have time to tell you the baptism story. But at any rate, God rearranged everything. And at the end of the story, we had a baptismal service on the second floor of a building with soldiers right underneath us. Just right underneath us. Three of them. They wouldn't let me go by. I had a cabbage without walking by my side. Security was that high. I said, Donald, how are we going to pull this off? They would come up when we were having our teaching meeting going on. They'd open the door and stick their heads in. I said, what if we're pouring water Sunday morning and the guard walks in? These are not our friends. I mean, there's Muslims down below. Now, they know we're in the country teaching English. Maybe they don't know everything else. And obviously, they don't. But I'm going to have to leave that story for lack of time. But decisiveness. Have a plan. Let's go on. Be influential. Cause people to think through the process of making a difference. Get your support base to think about the process of making a difference in the life of another. I go to the far corner of Qasr camp, an IDP camp in Iraq, and there's a little boy, 12 years old. He's hunched together behind a tarp. It's cold. He doesn't have a shirt. And as we begin to interact, I notice that he's missing an arm and he's missing a leg. He's a young boy. And we get the story. And in time, we follow the trail. I'm not sure. I think that's in tomorrow's session. I think tomorrow's session has features him as well. But the story goes on, the incident goes on, that in time we were able to get him outside of the camp, which is a challenge, to get him through the border, which is another challenge, from into Kurdistan, into Erbil, to ICRC for a prosthesis, and so on. But it's a tremendous story. But for a support base, they see this, then this, then this. Ah, there's a goal, and here is what happened. And in the process of all of this, these people are introduced to who Jesus is. And this young boy, after he gets his prosthesis, he's sitting in the back seat, and we're on our way back to camp, and he's talking. And I say to the translator, what is he saying? And he said, he's telling you, I'm going to pray for you every day. Now, I have a friend over there, and he knows, I think. I think he has been able to connect the dots as to who Jesus is. Be influential. Well, be persuasive. Help people feel, smell, touch, agonize, and engage. And in the process of all of this, Well, let's go on. Paint a mental picture with a story, illustration, or a happening, and do that individually and collectively. I'd like to enlarge here, but I'm going to just mention, and this is a really important point, being influential individually and collectively. After a presentation, all right, so I go to a church, and we're attempting to build support. We're attempting to share a vision and to help people understand what's going on and so on by their request. And afterwards, after everything is done, you know, you're done showing the last slides and you're done talking and the questions have been answered and the amen is said. And then I'm busy to get everything folded together. I need to unhook all the wires and you get everything together again because we're going to go out the door after a while. And guess what happens? There are 12 men that are standing around you. And they're saying, what about this? Tell us another story. What happened here? We want to hear the rest. And on it goes. All right. My response right at that point is critical. Because in their minds, I can come and I can speak for the evening, but there's things that they really, really want to know. They're my supporters. They're with me, and they want to know just a little bit more. At that point, it becomes critical that I take all night if I need to, individually or collectively, to explain and answer questions to their satisfaction. Build relationships. Your audience knows you're human. So don't paint any other picture. Oh, here's another. This is really important. Include children in your presentation. Involve the children. Yeah, the older people want to know what's going on. They want to hear the stories. They want to know what's happening in Iraq and in Bangladesh and so on. But there's children that come up and they say, oh, that's something. And, you know, they feel for the children and all, and they're very, very involved. Have a story for them. Oh, there's things that happen over in those countries with the children. You know, there's the story about other children that have gotten injured and hit by shrapnel, and you show a picture of these children in a hospital, and then the children come around, and you tell them the story. Guess what? You've got a young support base. This is valuable. They talk to mom and dad about these things. And if mom and dad forget the story, the children will help them remember. So what are we going to do about this situation? You know, these people have needs. It makes a difference. Building confidence with your support base. The circle gets big. Communication. Let's go on. Progress reporting. So sometimes the reporting that is done, I speak to you about Iraq, what is happening. But the story is much bigger than I. It goes so far beyond. There's other people involved in that program. A lot of other people. There's medical teams. There's people that come. There's doctors that come and so on. So the story is much bigger. And I have another story here, which I'm not going to tell you because I don't have time. But let's remember some things here. Who is the report coming from? So if the report goes beyond me, these are some questions. Who is the report coming from? Is the report biased in any way? In other words, we're looking for accuracy. Our support base needs to know. Are there any personal benefits involved that may be influencing that report? Is it second-handed? Does this person have access to reality? Very important question. So I'm quoting someone. Does that person have access to reality? Or are they helping the story to grow? Just some important questions. How well do they understand the big picture? Or is their view narrow? Very important questions. One thing that's really important here is when you are asked a question, if you don't know the answer, find it. Don't ever stumble over questions. There's no such a thing as a dumb question. Your support base wants to know. They want to know accurately as possible about these things. Well, okay, I already talked about sentiments from recipients. Sometimes there's a handwritten note. you know, something happens. I bring a note back, and I have one at home. I had forgot to bring it along. But you help someone, and they appreciate it. They do a handwritten note, and they send it along back. That's powerful. Your support base. They like to hear those. Actual comments, quotes. Maybe there's video clips or something like that. Photos with slide presentations, corresponding explanation. Communicate individually based on interest. Got an email recently, and it was handwritten note, came to Christian Aid, and they forwarded it to me, and I looked at it, and here it was, a man that wanted to reply to reading our story. He'd gotten our book, and he read it, and he said, I've got to talk with you. And so he sent this note. They sent it to me. I called him, and he said, you might be surprised at this, but I'm an Amish man. I said, good. He said, I live in central Michigan. I said, that's good. And he said, we have a young family. And I said, it's all good. And he said, he was kind of apologetic, but he said, I'm a pretty good businessman. He said, he didn't say it in that way, but that's who he is. He said, I run this, I'm a point man in a metal industry business, and we do roll forming, and he said, I raise puppies, and I've got my own secretary to do that. I said, well, this fellow's not fly by night. And he said, I've got natural gas on my farm, and he said, we keep our house warm, and he was humble about it, and he said, you know what? We've got everything we need. But he said, I read your story. And he said, my wife and I looked at each other, and we said, but there's got to be more. Ooh, 10 minutes. All right. I got to leave that story right there. Develop public relations on congregational and organizational levels. Share your heart, but don't beg for money. Don't forget that. As you share, you can, there's ways to make a need known without begging for money. That'll come. Integrity. Be creative. Include a good a blend of culture in reporting, but be factual and truthful. Personal experiences and people stories. That's what people really want to hear about. Facts and figures look different when they connect with your heart. I want to do just a little case study, and I'm going to flip through a few pictures here. This happens in Bangladesh. And the reason I do this is because, once again, your support base wants to know exactly what happened and where money got used for. How did it work? Here's a young girl, 18 years old. She's married, and she's laying here on her bed. That's not very clear, but I guess you can see. But it's okay, unless you want to turn the lights off. And so we sit by her bed, stand by her bed. And I explain to her that I'm an amputee also. She's an amputee. She lost a leg. And as I talked with her, she said, sit down. There was a little chair by her bed, so I sat down. And she said, get up. So I stand up. And she said, so amputees can sit down? And they can stand up? I said, yes, amputees can come from America because they care about what's happened to you. And so that's the beginning of the case study. Now she's out of the hospital. She's at her house. She's on crutches. We go there to visit, and we take her a sewing machine. Now you see the trail progressing here. And when we get there, she insists that she's going to cook a meal. Ladies, here's what the kitchen looks like. It's shared by the courtyard, out in the courtyard with others, and the chicken and everything. That one escaped. It'll get used another day. But she cooks. Okay? So there's a meal. And so there's a developing relationship here. Now, we take a look at her house. There's a hole in the floor for a bathroom. How's an amputee to deal with that? Okay? And we just bump into it again and again. And we say, you know what? And she's not the only one that we did this for. But for 150, get that? $150 U.S. dollars, we could actually add a piece on to her house. This is an add-on. Piece to her house. She has a commode, and she has a pump. Water table is very high, and that's the way you take a shower. If you go to Bangladesh, it's likely that they'll give you a lungi. You know, it's this thing you put around yourself, and it's real big, and you can go out to a pump jack, and one man runs the handle, and you stand underneath. When the water comes out, you hold it, and you wash, and you do this here, and you roll it back up. You've had your shower. You can do it in public, and it's okay. And so she is so happy. For $150, that pocket change, we can add onto her house and outfit her with a toilet and water. She was so happy. Now we're at the point where she's ready to get the Bible in her bag. And as we go, not only have we developed a relationship with her, but there's a community there that all piled into her house. Okay? And so, connect the dots. It's what happens. It's building support. Confidence in your support base. I'm just about out of time. I'm going to flip through accountability, another very important point here. Transparency with books and the use of monies. Be able to back up reports with numbers, pictures, and scenarios. And the next point here, take full responsibility for personal mistakes, cultural error, or unexpected expenses. And I should back up here just a little bit. There have been so many people that have come and they say, you know what? We could give money to Amish Mennonite Aid. We could give money to, yes, Christian Aid Ministries. We could give money to wherever. But they say, you know what? I would like for you to be that direct channel. Would you take this and go to Iraq, go to Bangladesh, go to wherever it is, and minister to the needs that are right there? And then we get to come back and help them understand exactly what their money was used for. I'm out of time. Connect the dots. Don't leave donors grappling with doubts. And finally, there's more than one right way to achieve your goals. And this little slide helps us to understand that. So be creative. There's more than one right way to do it.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769. Or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.